This is Phil Farron.
And I am driving home.
It's Thursday today. This is episode 512.
On our way to 8 years. No, 10 years. We're the podcast.
8 weeks. 8 weeks. Which I need to start talking to family. Say, hey, we're doing another one. Are you ready? Figure out when we're going to do that. All is well. Had a good week at work. Going to have a day off on Monday coming up for Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Yay. So going to have a little vacation day there honoring Dr. King. I think that's good. So I don't know that we have any special plans or anything like that. I'll probably end up just spending the day writing since I'm in the middle of the second writing sprint for book 10. But that's all going well. This is week 2 of that writing sprint, and I'm actually a few words down as of right now, but not too far. I should have put down 750 words last night, but I had to put a bunch of more words down to get, let's see, I got caught up from Monday night because I was editing the 3,000 words from Sunday night, so I didn't get as much done Monday night. I only got 500 as opposed to 1,000, and then Tuesday night, I kind of put on the afterburners a little bit and got like 1250 done, where I normally only do 500 on Tuesday, or no, 750 on Tuesday, whatever. Anyways, the upshot was I kind of blew out last night. I didn't actually get started writing till later by the time I got all the finances and things taken care of. And so as opposed to 750 words last night, I only put down, I don't know, 200, something like that. So I have to do better tonight. And if I don't, I have to do better this weekend. And if I don't, I'll get caught up on Monday. So that's all fine. But that seems to be going well. I have several things I still have to kind of work out the details on and get done. And I have several points that I want to hit in this book, and I think we're going to get them all hit, but, you know, we'll see. I think I know what I'm doing for the epilogue, which is the, you know, kind of the big emotional part. There's probably going to end up being 2 epilogues because I know what I need to do for the emotional part, I think. And then for the second epilogue, which I need in this book to hit some revelations, there's not going to be much emotion that I can evoke there. It's probably just going to be all creepiness. So that'll be fun. But that's all going fine. All is well at home. Had some nice conversation with friends this week. Had breakfast with a buddy this morning. And that's my 6 o'clock breakfast. It's the third Thursday of the month. And had a lovely breakfast this morning. Didn't actually get a chance to see him last month because it fell in the Christmas week. And so we postponed for December. But had a real nice breakfast this morning, and it's fun because we were chatting about Elf Day and that whole thing, and he's a real good guy, but I mean that would not be something that he would do. He would not do like an Elf Day, that kind of, it just wouldn't. It's out of his bailiwick. So we were kind of talking about all that, but the young lady, the waitress who takes care of us on our Thursday, we've struck up a friendship with her, and I had actually swung by on Saturday after Elf Day and had a mini Elf Day and had actually gone by Cracker Barrel to see her. And so we got a picture taken together, and while we were kind of talking about Elf Day, she came by to take our orders. And I thought, you know, we'll just take this opportunity. And so we were chatting, and I said, yeah. And I said, I came by on Elf Day to see you. And she just lit up. You did. And then she just went into all these stories about, you know, that Elf Day stuff and, you know, showing the pictures around because we had taken a picture and she was showing it to her coworkers and she was showing it to her sons and they were all just, and she said one of her, she showed it to her manager and her manager wanted to see the picture because she wanted to send it to corporate. So, you know, who knows? Who knows? But we're going and she's real animated talking about all this. And after she walked off, you know, I kind of looked at my buddy and went, see, this is why we do this. And he was cool with it. He said, no. He said, I'm cool with all this. He said, that's fine. So it's interesting. You know, it's just, it's interesting. I'm in the midst now of just on and off here and there planning for Valentine's Day. I'm going to do a little something for Valentine's Day, not really much, but and then I wasn't going to do anything for Star Wars Day because the Friday is actually the 3rd. It's not May the 4th be with you. But then I found this t-shirt and I was just like, "Ah. Oh, okay. Yeah, we've got yeah, we've got to do this." So I've been working all the pieces for that. And then, of course, we've got Leprechaun Day coming up in mid-March. But I think I'm just going to do what I did last year for that. Call it good. I was thinking about doing some extra stuff, and I did. Oh, man, I found this T-shirt by The Mountain. It's a leprechaun T-shirt thing where you're... It's the same kind of 3D printing thing where it looks like you're wearing this kind of tweed plaid coat with a vest and then like another vest with some chains and things on it where it's real old school leprechaun-y stuff. It's a cool t-shirt. And I found that. I thought, oh, that's cool. But it doesn't really kind of go along with the kind of more campy stuff that I was doing for Leprechaun Day, so I would have to put together a lot more stuff. But, you know, maybe next year I'll figure out how to do a combination of that, maybe for real. Maybe I can find myself one of those tweed jackets that's like a real jacket that's kind of an older style jacket and pair it with some kind of gold sequined vest and then, you know, do some chains and things on it to kind of marry the two together. We'll see. You know, but we'll see. It's fun. Fun to think about. It's just, you know, an additional little thing. I'm not doing the podcast on this this week, but I may have bookmarked this article. I bookmarked an article on creativity and how to, in essence, create creativity. And one of the things that they were talking about in there was constructing scenarios where you have to be creative. You know, you put yourself in a box and then you have to get out of the box. And that kind of forces, you know, your brain. And that's one of the things that's great about writing, because there are so many creative decisions that I'm having to make to manufacture one of these 150,000 word books, to tie everything together and to, you know, do the story arc and then to get the bigger story arc working and to get the cover done for it, to tie it into whatever the children's rhyme, nursery rhyme is that I'm tying it together with, and whatever the parable is. There's so many pieces that have to be tied together to make one of these things work, you know, that I'm constantly putting myself, boxing myself in, and then trying to figure how in the world am I going to get out of this one, you know. And so that's fun. It's fun. Okay, so this week I kind of have a short little thing, but I I thought this was interesting, and I've bookmarked a bunch of stuff that I have coming up for other podcasts, but this was just one of those fun little examples of how AI might produce results that you're not expecting. I take umbrage is a bit of a strong word. I take a small disagreement with the title of the article and the words that they used in the title, simply because I think it exaggerates the situation. But, you know, these titles are all clickbait. And certainly, when I read the title, I clicked on it, so it accomplished that. So you've got to kind of take the title with a grain of salt. But the underlying story is pretty interesting. So the title of this article was, and this is by Devin Coldeway, C-O-L-D-E-W-E-Y. The title of this article was, "This Clever AI Hid Data from Its Creators to Cheat at Its Appointed Task." Now, cheat is a little strong of a term. I suppose you could call this cheating, but cheating implies some sort of a moral framework. And I don't think that's implied here at all. It just did something unexpected. So anyways, he starts off by saying, you know, depending on how paranoid you are, this research from Stanford and Google will either be terrifying or fascinating. So the gig was this. They were working on a machine learning agent, AI, deep learning stuff, machine learning agent, and they wanted to take this machine learning agent and feed it a series of satellite images, aerial images, and have it convert it to street maps. And then they wanted, for some reason, to go back the other direction. Because I can see them going to street maps because Google is always looking for ways to get that done faster, and to get their stuff updated and for like Street View, well not Street View, for their street maps and all that kind of thing. I don't know why they wanted to go back the other direction, but they did want to go back the other direction as well. So they wanted this machine learning agent to take just regular aerial photos of the Earth, convert them into street map, Google map type information, and then they wanted the machine to convert them back as best it could. So that's what they asked it to do. That's what they were learning. Well, it turns out that the agent, the machine learning agent, was better at this than it should have been. In fact, it was so much better at this than it should have been that the creators who had set it on this task realized that something else had to be going on, because it was in the conversion between the street level information back into an aerial map, reproducing elements that did not exist perceptibly on the street map. So we'll get into that in a minute, but it seemed to be doing things that were impossible. But of course, they're not. So what this illustrates, though, is that AI, just like computer programs, just like they're going to do what you tell them to do. Okay? That's it. So if you give them an instruction, they're going to do their best. Well, with normal computing, it's just going to carry out this instruction. But with neural networks, things like that, it's going to normalize down. Normalize probably isn't the right word. It is going to learn, quote unquote, learn to do whatever it needs to do in order to come up with the sought solution. And this, as we give neural networks more and more power, they are going to come up with their own solutions, and the solution is going to be goal-oriented. It's not necessarily going to be encumbered by morality. So that's why I take a little bit of disagreement with the word cheat. This isn't cheating. This is simply this neural network figuring out how to fulfill the goal that has been presented to it, i.e. take an aerial photo, take it down into a street map, take the street map, resolve it back up into an aerial photo. So, because it was supposed to get from the input aerial photo as close as possible on the output, it did something that is not unknown, but it figured it out itself. And that is that it hid data inside the image of the street map. So, you know, like the skylights on the roofs of buildings that just disappeared when it made its street map, because those aren't normally shown on street maps, just the outline of the building is there. Those skylights that were on the roof of that building, when you just looked at the street map, you didn't really see that they were there on that building, on the roof of that building. But when it converted it back into the aerial view once more, which was supposedly a photograph, all of a sudden, you know, those skylights just magically reappeared. And the computer scientists were going, wait a minute, what did it just do? How did it do that? So what they found that it was doing was that knowing that it was a goal for it to preserve that information, the neural network created patterns of noise in slight color variations that constituted the roof, that when you just looked at the roof on the street view, it looked like a solid color. But in fact, it wasn't a solid color. It had these slight variations in it that were imperceptible to humans, but it didn't have any trouble at all reproducing coming back out of it. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Just a second. Oh, hey. Good. So, you know, this is all very interesting because this AI actually, and there is actually a word for this. There we go. There's actually a word for this, and the word for it is steganography. And in fact, I have had projects in the past where we have discussed, I've never implemented one, but we had discussed steganography, and we had discussed implementing steganography where we could do things like take financial information and encode that financial information into, you know, say photographs. And then, you know, we would have a site that would be like a photography site, and people could come to that site and, you know, they could look at various pictures and they would know that they should download such and such a picture. And then they would run that picture through an interpreter, and then out would pop the financial information. So, I mean, I've been involved in discussions to get those types of things done. You know, you would think that, wow, that's a pretty sophisticated, you know, and yada yada. But the fact is, the human eye can only see so many variations, especially down at the pixel level. And you put a bunch of those pixels together, and the human eye is going to average it. So you're looking at it, and you're not going to see that there's anything odd there. And that's what this computer program... All right, computer program. This is what this artificial neural network, that's what it actually did. It invented its own form of steganography. So, you know, that's pretty interesting. And I said, in this case, the computer's solution was an interesting one that shed light on a possible weakness with this type of neural network. That the computer, if not explicitly prevented from doing so, will essentially find a way to transmit details to itself in the interest of solving a given problem quickly and easily. This really is just a lesson in the oldest adage in computing. This is all in caps. It's an acronym. PEBKAC. PEBKAC. And PEBKAC stands for, quote, problem exists between keyboard and chair. And they said, note, not and computer, as I accidentally wrote before, obviously. That would imply a faulty cable or wireless interface. Thanks to everyone on the internet for pointing this out. Or as Hal put it, it can only be attributed to human error. Now, this paper that talked about this was actually presented in 2017. So it's not new. But it's a pretty interesting thing that these neural networks were advanced enough to invent steganography because there was a need to do so for themselves. And I don't know if it's a warning, but we should just be aware when we're dealing with things like neural networks that have problem-solving capabilities that, you give it a task, it's going to solve that task as best it can, and it's not really going to care if we think that taking information and coding it into specific patterns of colors so that it can convert it back out, it's not going to care that it's doing that. It's not going to look at that as quote-unquote cheating, because it's not cheating for it. It was given a task, and it accomplished that task. There is no morality involved here. So, there you go. I just keep saying, don't give these things machine guns, okay? Just don't do that. Do not wire them up to machine guns, because they will surprise us, guaranteed. This is Phil Ferrin, and I have made it home.